We're going to switch gears and take our guest who was going to start with us at about 11:45. We're going to take him a little early. Joe Rhodes, a self-employed McIntosh support specialist in Madison. He's been supporting Max professionally since 1999. And working unprofessionally for several years before that. And he's become a regular guest on our program. So we certainly like to talk with him about Apple computers and accessories. Maybe you've got some ideas. Maybe you're thinking about a holiday Christmas gift or something like that. What's new in the Apple world? We can talk with him about that. And certainly if you've got some issues relating to your Apple computer or the accessories, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And Joe Rhodes, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, glad to be here, Larry. Thanks.
Tell you what, when we think about Macintosh, the company itself is making a lot of money.
You know, for being in an economic downturn, they're doing surprisingly well. And I think part of it is they've just Apple has got one of their strongest lineups they've ever had. They've got just a fantastic laptop. They've got the iPhone. They've got the iPods. And rather than, you know, sit around and let these really good sellers just kind of sit there and then change it when they have to, they've been very proactive about adding new features, making them smaller, making them better. And, yeah, they're at a point now where, you know, that people really see the value in those things, even though they're a little bit more expensive than some other competitors.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It'll be interesting to see how that carries on as things progress here in the next couple months and year. But
you wonder if they're going to have to do some adjusting on price.
They probably will at some point. The big question is, will they decide to? And one of their stands is, Steve Jobs said, we don't aim for the lower end of the market because to hit those price points, we have to sacrifice too many features. And we want to produce things that really, you know, wow the end user, and you can't do that when you strip out all the features. The question is, will they have to, you know, take a second look at that stance and say, well, maybe we do have to strip out some features so that we can make their products more affordable?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, caller's online here, and Jamie in Green Bay. Jamie, hi.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks, you too. I have a quick question about printing more than one copy of something. I got an Apple laptop early this summer, and I use QuickBooks for my business.
Okay.
When I print off an invoice, I like to print off two copies, and I'm assuming this is an Apple and not a QuickBooks issue. But when I hit file and print, for the life of me, can't find anything on there where it asks you how many copies you want to print off. I just have to hit print twice.
Got it. Chances are, and this is, I'm assuming you're probably using macOS 10.4 or macOS 10.5?
Yes, 10.5.
10.5. By default, when you hit print, it gives you a very abbreviated window that basically just says, which printer do you want to use? And then there's a print button.
Right.
More or less. If you notice right next to that that section where it asks you to choose the printer, there's a little blue arrow pointing down.
Yes, I've
and
seen
if you,
that.
If you click on that, it will give you an expanded print dialog box that will give you all kinds of options, including how many copies you want, what paper size, do you want from page 2 to 7 or page 4 to 3. You know, that's where you can set all of the options. By default, they hide a lot of that just to try and make it, because most people just want a quick, simple one copy. So they kind of hide it, and then you can press that little arrow, and it'll give you an expanded print dialog box that'll show you all the stuff you want to see.
Okay, I've actually tried that button, and I can't find how many copies do you want to print in there, but that's where it should be.
That's where it's supposed to be, and what I would suggest is try it with a different application, like just try Safari, pull up on a web page, and make sure it's there, or if it's, because that page should be reasonably similar from one application to the next.
Right.
And once you find it, now it's possible that QuickBooks has done something clever, and I put that in air quotes. It's possible they've done something clever and they've, you know, re-engineered that box to do something special, but hopefully it's fairly straightforward. The only exception to that for the folks that are using like the Adobe products or Quark, but chances are if they're using those products, they already know that they have to do special things to print.
Yep.
Super.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Katie in Green Bay next. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. The reason I'm calling is that I have a MacBook, and I'm running 10.5. But I have the most unusual thing happening to me, and I cannot figure out what I am doing.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to reply to an email, I hit reply, and I do something. It's usually the start of a sentence, and I'm obviously hitting shift because I want to capitalize the first letter.
Okay.
I believe this is the issue. I don't know. I don't know what else I'm hitting, but it automatically sends it off prematurely, and it's driving me crazy. I've gotten to the point now when I want to reply to somebody, I delete the name on it until I'm finished so it can't be sent.
So you hit reply, you hit the shift key, and all of a sudden it sends the message as though you hit?
Well, I'm thinking it's the shift key. I'm thinking that I'm starting out the beginning of, you know, hi, how are you, or something like that, or somebody's name. I'm assuming that it has something to do with the shift key. Now, I know that when you're sending something, that's not the the right shortcut to use is a shift, if I'm correct.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, I don't. There's got to be a key combination that says send this message now, and I'm trying to think of what it is.
Yeah, me too.
The only one I can that's in the menu is Shift Apple D, which that's the keyboard shortcut for send this message. But
right.
That seems pretty far fetched from just holding down the shift key. I mean, that's three keys you got to hold down to do that accidentally.
Exactly. I mean, by the way, I should also tell you that I'm using Entourage.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where that would make any difference either.
Well, they might use a different key combination for that. So one thing you can look at, and it's going to take me a couple minutes to launch Entourage, so I'm going to kind of talk my way through this. Somewhere in one of the menus, see if there's a keyboard shortcut that says, send this message. Because there's a little button, obviously, you can press that says send. Somewhere in the menus, there is a option where you can go up to the menu and click on it and roll down and click on it with your mouse that'll say send this message. Take a look and see what that keyboard shortcut is, because right next to the command on the right-hand side, it'll give you the keyboard shortcut. And
well, that's command and then the return key, but I don't seem to be doing that.
Yeah, because my first thought is maybe you're accidentally hitting that. The other thing is, I don't know if you've turned on the tapping on your trackpad.
I don't know. I had taken my computer in for a checkup on something, and they possibly could have done that with the trackpad.
Okay.
I'll go to that and find out. You said it should be...
Well, the trackpad, I mean, it's one of those things I always turn it on because it's really handy not to actually have to physically click the button, but just tap your finger on the trackpad. But it's possible, although it seems unlikely that it would be so reproducible that maybe your side of your hand is hitting the trackpad and it's registering as a click and sending off the message, but that would mean your mouse would have to be over that send button again.
Okay.
I don't have a great answer, but you can try turning off that trackpad clicking if it's on. Under your Apple menu, if you go to System Preferences,
right,
there should be a section called Trackpad, or depending upon exactly which you have, it's either in Keyboard and Mouse, or there's a separate one called Trackpad.
I've got Trackpad.
Okay. And you might be able to turn off, if it's turned on, turn off the finger clicking part. I can't remember exactly what it's called on that model because it's changed a little bit.
Okay, the trackpad gestures are use two fingers to scroll, or allow horizontal scrolling, zoom while holding, clicking.
That's one.
Just take that one off and see what happens.
Yeah, try turning that off and just see if that has any effect on it. Like I said, it seems odd that your mouse would always systematically be hovering over that send button. but it's possible.
Exactly.
You stumped me. Right off the bat.
Well, I will try that then and see if that works.
Okay.
All right. Give it a shot. Thank you very much, Katie, for calling. You can join in, too. We're talking Apple computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes today of Madison, who has been doing Mac support for a long, long time. The number 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Doug in Racine next. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Yes, on a cold day. Actually, it's Chuck, but that doesn't matter. question I've got is I'm using a PC, and I'm using all the Word stuff and Excel and so forth, but mm-hmm. I've always liked Mac and had Mac backaways. But with all the files and everything that I've got, switching back to Mac.
So you're wondering how feasible that is and what kind of hoops you'd have to jump through if you decided to do it?
Exactly.
Okay. First thing you'd want to do, excuse me, is take a look at which applications you're using. Because you stated two real big ones, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel. And fortunately, those applications, you can take those same files on the Mac and they work fine.
Okay.
And you want to look at, you know, which applications are you using and is there an equivalent or the same application for the Mac?
But can I transfer all the data I've got over? You know?
Yes, you can. Okay. And as a matter of fact, if you go to an Apple store and you buy your Mac at the Apple store, they'll actually do it for you. Apple is really making it as easy as possible. They'll help get your email over from one system to the next and your address book, because for a lot of people, that's actually the most important thing, the files.
Well, that's right.
Files are typically pretty easy.
I'm using Microsoft Outlook with 2,500 customer contacts and names.
So, and that's probably going to be the trickier of the two migrations, but the Apple Store will actually help you out with that. They're pretty fantastic, and they do it for free.
Okay.
You can't beat that.
No, you can't beat that price.
No, and maybe my wife will use a computer again, because she is very much, or was very much attuned to Mac, but then when I got the PC, she wouldn't touch it.
Yeah. No, they've Apple has done a lot of work. They've really got a lot of polish. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you use it. There's just so many details that they thought of.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, and enjoy your program.
Thank you very much, Doug. Appreciate it. Jolene in Ashland, it is your turn. Hi, Jolene.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I just have a quick question. When I get my taxes back this year, I need a new phone, but I would also like to get maybe an iPod.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I could get both in one, and I don't need any bells and whistles, but if you could suggest something.
Well, are you with I'm assuming you're talking cellular phone.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with a carrier right now?
I am.
And who's the carrier?
I was trying to think of it.
It's Verizon.
Here's the thing. If you happen to be with AT&T, this is fairly simple. Otherwise, it's maybe a little more complex. But Apple does have what they call the iPhone, and it's gotten a lot of press. And it is an iPod. It is an Apple phone, and it is this web browsing device. It's a very sleek little device. And it's very, very intuitive and easy to use. As I'm very fond of saying, I've had mine now for 2 years. I got the first version. And as I'm very fond of saying, it's the first cell phone I've had that doesn't hate me. Because my old cell phones, they clearly hated me for one reason or another. And they really made my life hard at any opportunity they had. This is the first phone that doesn't do that.
How much memory does it have?
You can get them in, I believe it's... you're taxing my memory. I think it's either 8 gigabytes, 16 gigabytes, or they might have a 32 gigabyte version. I should know this off the top of my head, and I don't.
So nothing bigger that would include a phone?
Nothing bigger than that, no.
Okay.
But, you know, you can fit a whole lot of music and quite a few TV shows on 16 gigabytes of memory. Okay. You can also put all your email on there. You can put your schedule on there. All of this stuff syncs pretty seamlessly with your Mac or your PC. And they're, you know, quite a pleasure to use. The downside... you can only use it with an AT&T network. So if you're locked into a contract with, say, U.S. Cellular or Verizon or something like that, and you've got another year and a half or something like that, these companies are going to make it very, very painful and expensive for you to leave to go to, you know, an Apple product.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be that maybe you don't have good AT&T coverage where you live, or you just don't like AT&T, something like that. And so you want to stick with your current phone. You can go to apple.com/iSync, and you will find a list of phones that you can buy that will synchronize with your Mac. So if you have, and for me, this is such an important thing for me, because, you know, we put so much information on our phone. Most of us have a huge phone book in our phone.
Yeah.
If that gets lost, you know, we've lost, you know, it's like losing an arm. All these phone numbers are suddenly disappeared. Well, if you can synchronize that with your computer, now it's on your computer and your phone. And if your phone gets lost or you buy a new one, you simply have to synchronize it, and then all that stuff shows back up on your phone. So it's not living large with an iPhone, but it certainly makes life a lot more compatible between your phone and your Mac. So you can see a list of compatible phones that Apple officially supports by going to apple.com/iSync. And then there's a whole nother program called the Missing Sync. And if you Google for that... that is a program that will let you synchronize your Mac with even more phones than Apple supports. Specifically, a lot of the Palm phones, the Palm Trios and things like that, it works much, much better than Palm's built-in software. Palm's built-in software is really kind of ugly with the Mac. But this missing sync program lets you synchronize your notes, your mail, your address book, and all that sort of thing, your calendar with your Palm using missing sync. It's really quite nice. And then, you know, that way, if those are the phones that you have available with your carrier, you can synchronize one of those with your Mac, too.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jolene. And Ryan in Milwaukee, we're on to you. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good. I'm a local photographer, and I'm trying to optimize my workflow. And I've noticed that you guys have a program called Automator, and I'm not very literate with programming at all. Actually, I took a class back in high school and flunked it, but optimize the workflow between, say, Photoshop. I've got like tons of image files that I want to resize and throw on like a copyright logo.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to do that through Automator, and I know that Photoshop has an actions palette as well. But there are several other things that I like the images, like the Automator to do with the images as far as posting them up online to a website or whatnot.
Sure.
Do you have any recommendations as far as where I can find out more information on how to better utilize Automator or
sure.
any recommendations?
Well, you know, I should first start out with I actually flunked computer science too the first time. That should scare everybody. Honestly, I use Automator very, very little. What Automator is really good for is tying together several different applications. So taking like a file from Photoshop, putting in another application, a third application, then an output. That's what Automator is really designed to do. And they do this, it's kind of a fancy wrapper on top of a programming language called AppleScript, which is reasonably straightforward. If you see an AppleScript that someone has written, you can read it and it kind of makes sense. Like you kind of understand what it's doing because it's very English-like. Sitting down and writing the AppleScript, though, is, you know, kind of a different situation. The best I can suggest is take a peek through Google.
Okay.
But based on what you said, I think your best bet for, you know, resizing and tagging these images is going to be inside of Photoshop itself.
Okay.
And use their scripting, because I know Photoshop will do just some amazing things. I'm an engineer, so I don't actually know how to use Photoshop. I know how to install it and make sure it works properly, but that's about it.
Okay. All right. Great. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ryan. Good luck. Derek in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Derek.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My question is, on my computer, when I use Safari,
mm-hmm.
and I'm on like my college website, and I'm opening up letters that my professors might have or notes that are PDF format, they open up in the browser, but I find myself using Firefox more often than Safari, and I was wondering that those PDFs don't open, and I was wondering if you have like any kind of solution for something like that, being able to open up PDF files and something that's other than Safari.
Yeah, I think Firefox, their basic tact on that is they basically just save the PDF down to your desktop, and then they let you go and double click on it. I believe that you can, in Firefox, go in the preferences and tell it what application you want to open PDFs, and you can have it automatically open them once it's got them downloaded. I don't think it takes the same approach that what Safari does is it basically opens up a temporary copy of it right in the browser and then lets you decide if you really want to save it somewhere or not. Firefox assumes that once you've clicked on that link, you really want the file. It saves it to your hard drive, wherever you have that set. And then gives you the option of automatically opening them, say, in Preview or Acrobat Reader or something like that. But if you look in Firefox Preferences, there should be a way to associate PDF files with, say, Preview and have them automatically open once it's completed the download.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I was just curious about that because I noticed that every time I click on, you know, some PDF file, it'll normally just say, like, you want to download or open it. And I was just wondering if there was a way that I could have it set up where it opens up just like how it does in Safari.
I would not be surprised, considering how incredibly flexible and open Firefox is, if someone hasn't written a Firefox add-on that will do exactly that. And you might Google around for that. Look for a Firefox plugin that'll display PDFs right in line. I'd be shocked if that didn't exist, because people write all kinds of stuff for Firefox. People have written an iTunes clone that run inside of Firefox. So if they can do that, they must have written a PDF inline viewer.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thanks. Thanks for the show.
Yeah, thanks, Derek, for calling. Michael in New Berlin, your turn. Hi.
Hello. I'm a PC. My father is a Luddite computer wannabe, and I'm trying to decide whether or not I've got an old Mac sitting around with OS X Tiger on it.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that might be more intuitive to, for a person who doesn't really get computers at all. And I'm just trying to figure out what he wants to use it for is go online, sell things on eBay, take pictures with a digital camera, upload them to eBay, that kind of stuff. And every time we get over there with a PC, it's like I walk out of the room or I've threatened to take his computer, throw it into the furnace, buy him a new one because I get so frustrated. So can you give me advice and I can listen to you on the air afterwards?
Sure.
Let's get more questions.
Sure. Well, Michael, you know, you're asking a Mac guy if a Mac is an easier solution, so you're going to get a tainted answer. So you know, weigh everything with a grain of salt. But my impression after teaching people both is that the Mac, on average, is a little more consistent. So, you know, the print box looks the same in all of the applications. If you want to select more items than one in a list, it's the same in all applications. Apple really strives to keep their user interface and their actions the same across one application from the next, and they really encourage third-party developers to do the same. So from just a learning standpoint, I think Macs are a little easier to pick up because they... You know, once you learn a basic concept, you get to apply it across the board. However, I'm going to put two caveats in this. Number one, depending upon how fast that Mac is that you have sitting around, a slow computer can actually be a lot more troublesome for someone to learn. And I saw this when I was helping my mom learn how to use a computer. She'd click on the print button, and the computer didn't do anything. And she didn't know what happened. She didn't realize the computer was just working hard because it was slow. So she'd print hit the print button a couple more times. And before she knew it, she had 15 copies of this recipe coming out of the printer.
Yeah.
And it was just because the computer couldn't keep up with her, and she did not get an immediate response out of it. So if the computer is fairly slow, that will actually make it a little more difficult for someone to learn because an immediate reaction to something is the best way to learn what's going on.
Well, it's a 400 megahertz with 512 memory. It's as quick as what he's got now in a Wintel system.
Okay. So, I mean, that's certainly no speed demon, but for basic, you know, internet and web browsing, it should be fine. For hooking up a digital camera, there may be a little, you know, trouble because that machine is going to have a slower version of USB, so it's going to take longer for the camera to be recognized. It's going to take longer for the pictures to show up on the computer, things like that. The other thing I'm going to throw out here is if you're the main instructor, you know, this happens with me and my mom. She calls me up a lot with questions about what's going on with her computer. And if you're not as strong with the Mac as you are with the PC, you're going to be in several occasions going, I don't know, because I can't imagine what it is you're looking at. They'll try and explain something, but they won't have the best verbiage. And so they're going to call you, their tech support person. And they're going to explain it as in the best way they know how, but you may not really understand what it is they're looking at. So that might actually make it harder for you to help them. On the flip side, maybe that's what you're looking for. So
exactly. The point is, for example, with my father, I tell him go to File or Edit, and they're always in the same place in every Windows application. File, Edit are always in the upper left-hand corner, whatever you're in.
Right.
And he's looking out the door. Is there a deer running outside? You know, what is it? He's like, look at the screen. You got File, Edit. They're always in the same place. They don't move. And it's like, you blow your hair out.
Right. Well, and that specific example, on a Mac, you will find that easier because the File and Edit things are always at the very top of the screen. So when you're trying to explain that over the phone, you can say, look at the very top of your screen. Do you see that white bar going across the top? You know, you can add, you know, what does it say? Does it say File, Print, Edit? So it's a little easier from that because with Windows, it is attached to an individual window.
Right. That I can see that being an issue, yeah.
But yeah, just along those lines, one of the funniest examples I've ever heard, and I love my mom dearly, she calls me up one time and says, Joe, I can only see half of the internet. And this is just one of those, you know, not using quite the right verbiage. And I sat for a second. I said, well, Mom, which half can you see? As it turns out, what she had done is she had changed her screen resolution. Her browser window was halfway off the screen. And so that was the internet, and she could only see half of it. And it was just the cutest thing ever. But that's, you know, that's one of those, you know, if you're not as familiar with the Mac, you may be confronted with these kind of bizarre explanations, and you're going to have to kind of piecemeal through and go, okay, what's actually happening on their side? But it's yeah, my humble opinion is for someone who's just starting out, I think the Mac is a little more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And also you don't run into as many crazy things. It's a little safer because there aren't as many viruses and exploits for the browser and things like that. I'm not saying there are none, but they're far fewer. And people who are new to computers don't realize all the time that you can't put your credit card number into any web page that comes along. So sometimes that's a little bit, you know, it gives you a little bit of a safety cushion there.
And good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Talking Apple Computers today with Joe Rhodes of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Joe, we have an email from Marty in Madison, Wisconsin. Love your show. Get a ton of answers from listening. My question is about the Mac program called GarageBand. I, unfortunately, am not a Mac owner. Is there a Windows version of GarageBand, or is buying a Mac my only option?
There is not a specific Windows version of GarageBand. Apple wrote that program, and it's really one of the jewels that they kind of tout in front of PC users to go, hey, look at how great it would be if you were over on our side of the fence.
What is, for those who don't know, what is GarageBand?
For those that don't know, GarageBand is basically a very easy-to-use sound recording studio. So, for example, if, let's say you're like me and you have no musical talent whatsoever, but you're endlessly curious, you can fire up GarageBand, and they have hundreds, if not thousands, of sample loops. And you can drag these sample loops up and put them together, and you can, say, put down a piano, and then on a different track you can put some drums, and a different track you can put some guitars, and you can build a song in no time, and it actually sounds really good, even if you're like me and have no musical talent. Now, if you have musical talent, it gets even better, and this is where the big value of GarageBand comes in. Let's say you have an aspiring musician in your house, and they want to record, say, their instrument. They can put on a microphone, put it into your Mac. You can record a track of, say, them playing guitar or trumpet or whatnot. And then you can use these loops to put a background track behind it, and they can build their own song with their own vocal or their own instrument playing with a full backup band behind it. And before you know it, you have this incredibly polished, very professional-sounding song, and it's drop-dead simple to use. And then you can go out, if you don't like the you know, many loops that come with it, you can go out and buy jam packs that include even more loops. So you can buy a jam pack for drums or a jam pack for guitar or piano or whatnot. And you can really, and they're all royalty free, so you can put this stuff together, and if you've got the next big hit, you can actually go out and sell it because you have no legal obligation to pay anyone for these royalties. Apple already did it.
And I'm trying to remember, there is...
I'm sure there's a Windows equivalent.
There's something you can purchase that's a Windows equivalent, but it's going to cost you some money. And I'm blanking on it now, but it'll probably come to me before the end of the program.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you ask the great almighty Google, they've got something. I know people do this. There's absolutely programs out there for Windows that do this. The question is, do you have kind of the low-end consumer stuff that's really easy to use? Because I know there's a lot of high-end stuff that'll do it for professional recording studios.
Yeah.
The big thing that GarageBand just surprised everybody is you can do this multi-track recording on a you know, reasonably inexpensive Mac, and it's, you know, included with iLife for $79. That's the part that grabbed everyone's attention.
Absolutely. Well, we have another one here. Joe, I want to connect my two Macs and two printers wirelessly with the time capsule. How do I do it? It's from Peter.
Sure. Well, this is, you know, it's both complicated and simple at the same time. So let's see how I can do this. The first thing you do is you get your time capsule set up, and Apple has, you know, their little utility that'll help you go through and set it up. And if you want to turn on encryption, which if you're around anyone else, you have a neighbor that's close by, you're in a condominium or something like that, it's a good idea. So once the two Macs are both connected to the same network, you should both be able to get to the internet. That's the first thing to make sure, is you can make sure on both computers you can get to the internet. The printers, you will plug into the time capsule, and then Apple has a program, and to set up the time capsule, you'll be using this already. It's called Airport Utility Admin, and this will be on the CD with the time capsule, or if you already have Mac OS X installed and updated, it should be there in your utilities folder as well. That's kind of the program that you use to set these things all up. But basically, you connect your internet to the time capsule, you connect your two Macs wirelessly to the time capsule, which should be fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. And then you connect the two printers via USB to the time capsule. And for the most part, they should just all talk. But as they say, the devil is in the details. And without being able to ask questions back and forth, I can't go through exactly, you know, what trouble you might run into, but it shouldn't be too difficult.
All right. Let's go to Mark in Madison. Mark, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have an Apple-related network question for you. We had had for a few years internet service provided by a telephone company, and recently switched to cable, and now our wireless connection doesn't work. and we're running Mac OS 10.3.9, and I'm using an airport base station. It's the original graphite base station, and in the network preferences, when I try to troubleshoot this, it says airport has a self-assigned IP address and may not be able to connect to the Internet. Never had this problem under the other Internet service provider, and I just wondered if you had an idea what's going on.
Sure. There's a couple of things. You have your cable modem there, and you've got an Ethernet cable that comes off of it, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And then you have to, I'm assuming you have that plugged into the right port on the airport, and depending upon which airport you have, there may only be one port to plug into. I can't remember.
Yeah, there's only one port on that one.
Have you restarted the cable modem?
I have tried that, and one of the things I have going on is I do have a router between the cable modem and the base station.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Depending upon exactly how you have that set up, if the airport is also acting as a router, that might be part of the problem.
Mm.
In this case, you may want to... It sounds like you've got a router that's working fine and it's doing what it needs to do. In that case, you've got the route. The Airport Express is connected to the router on the same side that you would connect, say, a second computer or third computer. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. You would want to go into the airport admin utility and tell that airport to be a bridge. And I can't remember exactly which screen it's in, but essentially you want that to act as a bridge instead of a router.
Okay.
Now, if the airport is having trouble acquiring an IP address, which sounds like that's what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But other computers that are connecting to that same router, like if you took a computer and just plugged a cable in there, the first thing I do is just take the cable out of the Airport Express or out of the airport, plug it into one of your computers, and make sure that computer can get a valid IP address.
Okay.
Generally speaking, although not always, they're of the form of they'll start out like 192.168.something.something. So that's how you can usually tell. You'll know it's wrong if the address says 169.254.something.something. that's a self-assigned IP address, and that's how you know it's wrong. So if your computer can get a valid address from your router, then you know that your router is working properly. Try connecting that cable to your Airport Express, your airport. If you're still having trouble, one option you have is you could try manually assigning an address to that airport. I have seen computers as they get old, sometimes the Ethernet port gets a little crazy and it won't pick up a valid address automatically, and sometimes you have to manually do it.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Joe Rhodes, our guest, as we talk Apple computers and accessories here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at Apple computers and accessories today with Joe Rhodes, Macintosh support specialist, works out of Madison, and really pleased to have him with us today, Larry Mueller here. If you want to ask him a question, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Jay in Eagle River is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Jay. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I've got a MacBook.
Okay.
And I'm trying to use DVD player to play a movie on my television.
Okay.
I went and bought the cables last week, turned everything off,
mm-hmm.
plugged it in, turned it on. I managed to get the screensaver up on my television, but I can't get the movie to play. Any suggestions?
Got it. I can't say exactly, but I have a pretty good idea of what's going on. I would check when you have your TV connected and turned on, and it's you can see, there's something going on over there. Take a look in your system preferences under the display option. And you should, now your computer should essentially see that TV as a second monitor. And probably what you want to do is there should be a option there someplace when you have two monitors connected. There should be an option where you can say mirror the displays. So what you have on your one display will be an exact copy of what's on the second.
All right.
So in that, once you have it mirrored, you'll be able to fire up your DVD player, and it will show on both. And obviously, the one you're going to be looking at is the larger one on the screen. There may be a way when by default, when you hook up a second monitor, your Mac uses it in what's called extended desktop mode. The idea being that you have a window on one screen, you can drag it over and use it and drop it on the other screen, and you can kind of have double the screen area. And there may be a way to get DVD player to actually play on that second monitor instead of the first. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I would think the easiest thing is just tell it to mirror so that both displays are exactly the same.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Leroy in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi.
Hello. I'm an iMac owner, and I'm looking for a scanner that would scan black and white negatives into the computer that I could then work with in Photoshop or iPhoto and print out as regular photographs. I wonder if you have any information.
Sure. Well, pretty much any of the scanners now have high enough resolution that they can scan in the negatives. Where you'll see some differentiation is if you have, you know, hundreds and thousands of negatives, if you want something that has an automatic feeder that you can put a stack of them in and have it go through and just automatically cycle through them all. For the most part, though, the scanning the negatives is in large part done now. Changing it from negatives back to an actual photo is done in software. So the actual hardware doesn't need to support it so much. It just has to have enough resolution to be able to scan in a small piece of film and turn it into a larger photo. But even the entry-level scanners these days have that capacity. I have had better luck than not with Epson scanners. Mm-hmm. They seem to do a better job of making nice Mac software. I have had less than pleasurable experiences with HP software for their scanners. It seems to be a little... They just don't seem to put as much effort into writing the software and making it a really good experience. I have no doubt that their hardware is fantastic, but ultimately it's, you know, how easy is it to use? So, and those are just my off-the-cuff impressions. I can't say that's backed up with any empirical evidence.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling in, Todd in Waupaca. It's your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I really appreciate the show.
Sure.
I've got a G5, and I've also got a MacBook Pro, so I really am joining in the Apple team recently. I've really been. But my question, you were just talking about Firefox,
mm-hmm.
and I was always using Safari,
mm-hmm.
and getting frustrated at times with the browser, and I just recently went over to Firefox, and one of the things that I really liked about having Safari was an autofill feature.
Yes.
And I've Googled all over the place, and I can't... And Firefox does amazing things, and there's so many add-ons and applications and stuff, but I haven't been able to find the autofill that Safari used to do. And that was such a convenient thing, because anytime I'd go to a site, I could just hit the tab, and boom, everything that I'd had from previous things that I'd done, I didn't have to worry about typing stuff in, and, you know, it was two clicks away, and I'd be done.
Sure, yeah. Do you
know if that's possible?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I basically Firefox is my second browser when something doesn't work properly in Safari. It's one of those things. Safari has always been good enough that I've never had a big urge to get, you know, change from it.
Right. Now see, I had just recently switched over, and the main reason was somebody was talking about all the different, you know, the add-on apps that you were just talking about recently, and you know, one of the things, like, even if you're, I was interested in like web design and stuff, and like you can take the CSS. Out of it, and
yes.
You can actually look at websites. You can do anything you want, basically, with Firefox. It was amazing the different things they can do.
Yes, I've seen that actually, and I've tried it because it's really fun to see what happens, how much you can do with the style sheet.
Sure.
And Yahoo actually has a really neat one where they'll actually go through and analyze your web page and see where you can, you know, clean off some extra stuff from your images and still have, you know, basically how to trim down your web page without affecting the quality.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, Firefox is great for that. I don't know about the autofill.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right. Can't help you there, but thank you very much for calling, Todd. Appreciate it. Stephanie in Beaver Dam emailed having problems with her MacBook Pro communicating with her printer via a Bluetooth wireless connector. The computer recognizes the printer, but when you press print, nothing comes off the printer.
Mm. You know, I've never set up a printer with Bluetooth. I'm not sure. First thing I would do is take a peek in the utilities folder, which lives inside of your applications folder. There's a program there called Console. And it's kind of an odd name, but essentially what it is, it allows you to look at the logs for any particular thing that's going on your computer. And your computer actually keeps a lot of log files. And if you hunt around in there, you will find a section called CUPS, which sounds funny, but it's actually the Common Unix Printing System.
Oh.
And you will find an error log there, and you can click on that and see if perhaps there is some sort of log being generated that said, you know, hey, there's an error. What you might want to check is, first, make sure you can print to that same printer with a direct cable if the printer has that capacity. If it's got a USB cable, try that first, and make sure that, because that'll at least eliminate, you know, is this a driver issue? Maybe you have to install some software for the printer, because if it won't work via USB, it still won't work via Bluetooth. Once you have it, you know that it's working via USB, then at least you can narrow down the list of things and say, okay, well, we know it works. We've got the right drivers. Now I just have to get the Bluetooth part of it working. And again, I would say Google is probably your friend there. But you can check, like I said, that console application. It'll at least give you some breadcrumbs on where you can start from. It'll also give you a couple of things that you might be able to put into Google when you're searching, because it'll give you an error message. And if you put that in quotes in Google, it'll search for that particular error message and kind of help you narrow things down.
All right. And Therese and Stevens Point, response to the caller was having problems with her emails being sent prematurely. This has happened to her on occasion, mainly when she was in a hurry and she couldn't figure out why. She uses Yahoo for doing email. Started playing with it just now and found that when I use the tab key to move from the to box, et cetera, to the body of the message, it eventually goes on the send button. And if I hit return as I start to type, it gets sent. I don't know if that happens with Entourage, but perhaps there's a connection.
It is entirely likely.
Yeah.
Absolutely possible. Boy, we have some really smart people listening here.
we do.
It scares me. It does, because they're smarter than I am.
Oh man, could you suggest a new secondhand Mac for me? Christine wonders. She has a 700 megahertz eMac with a 1 gig RAM, mm-hmm. two external storage drives, one a 240 gig mirror drive, and the other an 80 gig. Like to stay with Tiger 10.4.9. She uses Photoshop CS2. And Illustrator CS extensively, doesn't want to spend the money for upgrades. She has to go to OS 10.5.
Right. Yeah, because when you go to 10.5, there's a number of things that you're using there you probably would have to upgrade, at least in the software category. You know, upgrading your Macs is finding a secondhand Mac. Apple has a strangely high resale value. I've not figured it out. You look on eBay and you see what people are getting for a 3-year-old or 4-year-old PowerBook G4, and it's kind of stunning. I think what you're definitely running into some of the upper limits of what that eMac is going to handle. It sounds like you've kind of worked around it by adding some external hard drives, but I think maybe a thing to look for is maybe like a used G5 tower or even a G5 iMac. All of those will run 10.4, and if you've already got the 10.4 disks, you can easily put it on there if they didn't come with it. The Intel Macs, it gets a little bit more questionable because you have to, you know, some of them shipped with 10.5, some of them shipped with 10.4, and officially the versions of Photoshop and whatnot that you have don't support the Intel Macs. It's not until they came out with CS3. So I would probably look for a PowerPC Mac. I would probably stay away from the Mac Mini because it's not going to be exceptionally faster than what you're dealing with now. I would probably look at, like I said, a used iMac G5 or a G5 Tower if you can find one of those.
And Tom emailed us and regarding a plugin for Firefox for reading PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
He says, try this plugin for Firefox regarding reading PDFs, www.pdfdownload.org.
You know, I figured there had to be something out there, and I knew somebody would know it. So.
pdfdownload.org.
There we go.
That's a suggestion. And Therese in Stevens Point has a question
Hi.
For you.
Hi. You actually got to the email that I sent regarding the woman that was having some premature sending problems on her email.
Oh, cool.
But since I have you on the line, I have a question for you. You mentioned that PC users that want to switch over to Mac can have all their files transferred easily for them if they get their computer through an Apple store. But what do they do if they don't get it through an Apple store, if they get it, say, from another buyer or a seller such as Best Buy? Is there a pain-free method of switching someone over? I have a friend who's really interested in switching over to a Mac.
Yeah. There are, you know, depending upon how industrious you are, you can actually do this yourself. It's not terribly hard. The simplest way is if you get one of those little USB thumb drives and you just copy it to a thumb drive and then plug it in your Mac and copy it back. But that can be a little tedious, and it's not necessarily guaranteed to get all of the different things you can get. You can take your Mac that you bought from somewhere else, and you can take it to the Apple Store, make an appointment with what they call the Genius Bar. And that is, for folks that don't know what this is, if you're within driving distance of an Apple Store, you can go in there and get free tech support. It is a fantastic value to go do and take advantage of. They also have very inexpensive training. It's a phenomenal way to learn all the things that your Mac can do for you. But you can take your Mac and your PC into the Genius Bar. I'd probably call ahead and make an appointment. And yeah, they'll help you with this. Apple is, they've got this notion that they'll give you free tech support in their store, because now you're in their store and you're seeing all the shiny new products and all the other things that they, and it really makes the Mac experience more appealing. You're in their store, which they've done a good job of making a very appealing retail experience. It's really a win-win situation for both sides.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Bill in Bayside, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I've got a Mac ProBook, and if it is not connected, and it just started doing this, if it's not connected to the power adapter, after I have it on for about 10 minutes, it shuts itself down.
Okay. One of two things is happening. Either the power manager is getting a little goofy, which can happen from time to time, and I don't remember the exact sequence of resetting it. I think it involves unplugging it, taking out the battery, and holding down the power key for 10 seconds. But if you look on Apple's support site and you Google for power manager reset, they'll have an article very quickly. The other option is it could be that your battery is starting to fail. And that is a very common symptom of a battery that's starting to fail, where it'll say, hey, I've got 90% charge, and you unplug it, and it works for 10 minutes. It'll say 92%, 91%, oops, 0%, and shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more often than not a symptom of a bad battery.
Okay, it's going to about 88%, it's not zeroing out, and then it's shutting off.
Yeah, exactly. But if you try and restart it, it probably doesn't fire back up. Unless you plug it in. It can be a symptom of a bad battery.
You know, Max, we actually just got a new free battery from Apple because there were some batteries, they had a bad batch.
Yep.
And we were already well by the time when we were supposed to send it in or even notify them, but they went ahead and gave us a new battery anyway.
Yeah. If you look on Apple's support site, it's a little tough to find. You have to do a little searching, but they actually had a couple of battery recalls, depending upon exactly which battery you have. And you can punch in your serial number and see if you're eligible for one of those recalls, in which case you can get a free battery.
Yeah, which was very nice.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, a new battery is, I think they're about $130
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so. That's all right. Well, great, thanks. That is very helpful. I appreciate that.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, ours just arrived in the mail, as a matter of fact, a couple of days ago. Don in Germantown, hello.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I appreciate the time. It's a wonderful show. I have a question concerning you had mentioned accessories, and what I'm looking to do is attach microphones to my iMac.
Okay.
I have I've converted video to digital on the iMac, and also photos and slides and all kinds of stuff. So it's been a really nice a nice journey doing it. It's been very easy and very nice. But what I'd like to do is take microphones with my relatives, grandparents and aunts and uncles, and as the slideshows or movies are going, I'd like to record them talking about the pictures.
Sure, kind of have them narrate the experience.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's I'm sort of drawing a blank on how to accomplish this, and what I was looking for is either a room microphone of sorts,
mm-hmm.
or the lapel pipe, I don't want to spend a whole lot of money on it, but I do want to achieve that. And I guess, what's the most efficient way to do that?
Well, microphones are an incredible science of which I can only scratch the surface because I'm not much of an audio recording. I know they have directional microphones that you have to talk into very specifically, and if you even are off at a couple degrees angle, it won't really pick much up. And then they have non-directional microphones that you can literally put in a room and just catch the whole ambiance. My hunch is you're probably going to be looking for a directional microphone because you really want to get their voice and you want it to be clear, and you don't really need to hear, you know, the heater kick in the background or something like that. In terms of connecting to your Mac, depending upon exactly which iMac you have, but pretty much any recent iMac you have should have an audio in port. And it looks kind of like a little headphone jack, but it's just, you know, a little different. So you can plug a microphone into that. You can also get a USB capable microphone, and that'll also work. You just plug it into the USB port. Once you have the microphone connected, you want to figure out, well, how do I get this audio in? And we were talking about GarageBand earlier. The simplest thing to do would be to open up GarageBand and have it record this as a track. You record it into a track, and then you can export it as an MP3. And then in whatever application you're using, say you're using iMovie and you're doing the slideshow, you can lay it down as a separate track of audio to go on top of your slides. And that way, if the audio gets off a little bit or you want to have a little break, you can break it and move it around, and it gives you a lot of flexibility with that.
Aren't there built-in mics? We have a built-in mic on ours.
Pretty much every Mac except for the Tower has a built-in microphone.
Yeah.
And for many purposes, that's actually good enough. You might even want to give it a try with that.
And I did, but I set it up with our family and sort of just spread everybody around.
Yeah, you're too far away from the microphone then.
That's right.
Yeah. Apple designed that microphone more for systems like iChat, where you're actually, you know, looking right at it and kind of talking right at it, and it works pretty well for that. But if you're trying to get like a group of people together, you might want to just do some Google searching on directional versus non-directional microphones. Larry probably knows more about this than I do. He's a
radio
guy.
There are you actually this day and age. You can get a fairly decent mic. You go to a place like a Radio Shack, and you're going to be able to find there. They're going to be quite helpful, and you're going to be able to find something for $50 or less that will serve your needs.
And to the best of my knowledge, there's nothing Mac specific about a microphone.
No, there isn't.
They're pretty much platform agnostic. So
that's right. Thank you very much for calling. Gordy has a G5 with Tiger, if he needs to add software to put photos and slides on CDs, and probably not.
Sure. It's fairly simple. If you've got the photos and you'd say you want to just put these photos on a CD so you can give them to someone else and they can just take a peek at them, whether it be a Windows machine or a Mac or something like that. It's pretty simple. You can put a blank CD in a Mac that has a CD burner, and pretty much all of them do, and it will pop up on the desktop like any other removable disk. I mean, back in the days of old, we'd call it a floppy disk or a zip disk or something like that, and basically it just shows up on your desktop, and you drag any files you want to that disk, and when you're done, then you take it and you move it to the trash can. It will, instead of throwing it away, it will ask you if you want to burn the disk. You hit burn, and voila, you have a disk that will work in Mac or PCs with whatever files you happen to drag to it. The trick is, if you're using iPhoto, and a lot of us are, you want to take those photos and you want to get them as just regular files, which is probably the trickier part. And as it turns out, it's really simple to do. You go into iPhoto, you find the photos you want and, you know, select however many that is and just drag them over to your desktop. iPhoto will export them as plain old files. And once you've done that, you can drag those plain old files over to your CD, burn it, and you're off to the races.
And Deb has a question, and she has a MacBook running OS 10.5. There's a known issue with the first letter that the user types not registering in a field. Do you know if there's a fix to this?
Yes, there is. Basically what happens if you leave the computer sit for long enough, it doesn't go to sleep, but it kind of powers down the keyboard or something to that effect. And then the first time you walk back up to it and you hit a key, it doesn't register that key and it registers the second one. There is a firmware update for your keyboard. And if you run Apple Software Update, it should ask you about this. So you go into the Apple menu, say Software Update, and it should, you know, pop this up. And what it should do is once you're done updating all your software, this little program should fire up and say, welcome to the keyboard firmware updater. Click OK to continue. It'll ask you for your password. You click OK, and it'll do some things. You have to be plugged in. If you've got a MacBook, you have to be plugged into the wall outlet power. If you've already run Software Update and it says it's not there, take a peek in your utilities folder and see if maybe it installed it, but it just didn't run for some reason.
Oh.
That will also be in your utilities folder, which lives in your applications folder. There's a little thing. I think it's called, you know, Apple Keyboard Update or SMC Update or something like that. It won't be too hard to find. And you basically double-click it and you just follow the prompts.
And someone was wondering, has a G4, this is Scott, running 10.3.9, like to upgrade, wondering if he can upgrade directly to 10.5.
Yes, you can, if your hardware supports it. And the minimum requirements for running macOS 10.5 are a G4 that's running at least 867 megahertz or faster. And you can find this out really easy. You can go into the Apple menu, you can say about this Mac, and it'll pop open a little box. It'll tell you exactly how fast your processor is, what you have, how many you have, and how much memory you have. If you want to get, you know, down the nitty-gritty and find out all the details, there's a button there that says More Info, and it will tell you everything you've ever wanted to know about your Mac. I would suggest that you have at least 1 gigabyte of RAM. I don't know if that's Apple's official minimum recommendation or not, but that's really... the least you should have to make it, you know, usable and fun. And if you can, 2 gigabytes is not a bad option. Depending upon how old that G4 is, that could be very inexpensive or it could be very expensive, because the older G4s, they've stopped making that memory. So there's not a lot of it around anymore, and supply and demand has pushed up the price.
And in 15 seconds, which provider do you like better, AT&T or Charter? Which one is less problematic?
You know, I've had both, and I think they're both pretty much equivalent.
Okay.
Yeah. I use both. They're both good enough. I don't have anything terribly bad to say.
Joe, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's great to be
here. We had a stack of emails and a bunch of calls waiting, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but
well, hopefully next time.
You'll be back.
I hope so. Thank you.
Joe Rhodes, our guest. And just Google him. Go to Joe Rhodes, and you'll find his website. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.